Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies brought to you with the support of the ICON Research Center at the University of Warwick. This is episode 18, where we discuss gig economy, algorithmic management, and scientific management of Frederick Winslow Taylor. All this based on a Financial Times article by Sarah O'Connor, When Your Boss is an Algorithm. For more information and to get linked to the text, please go to our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. My name is Dimitris, coming to you from Birmingham in the United Kingdom.
This is Pedro, coming to you from Brasilia in Brazil.
This is Ralph, coming to you from Albuquerque, New Mexico, where we eat more chilies every year than the British drink cups of tea.
And this is Arianna, coming from Coventry in the UK.
So how many chilies have you eaten today, Ralph?
I had a green chili burrito, so one, not so far.
Okay.
That's not keeping up to the standards, you know?
Yes, I'm below my number, but I'm going to catch up after lunch.
Targets are important, as we're going to learn today.
Exactly right. I got 20 pounds of chilies at the Hatch Chili Festival a couple weeks ago, so I'm working my way through those.
Just a reminder, never put chili on my food, Ralph, because I'm allergic, so it might kill me.
All right. That's important to know if you come visit me in New Mexico, yeah. Peter. And I will not send you any chilies for Christmas.
Okay, no.
Maybe you shouldn't have mentioned that on a public podcast, Pedro, in case there's someone out there, you know, pursuing
exactly.
You.
Well, it takes a lot of chilies to kill me. So, you know, the maximum that they can do is just, you know, give me some unpleasant things. But anyway, before we start, should we introduce our dear guest?
Yes, we absolutely should. We have a wonderful guest today, Arianna. Welcome.
Welcome, Arianna.
Well, thank you.
Yes, welcome, Arianna.
Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to join such an esteemed podcast.
Oh, thank you.
You're very kind.
So, a brief introduction about Arianna for those who don't know her. Arianna is a fellow PhD here at Warwick Business School at the Industrial Relations Department. And she has an interest on trade union and labor rights activists. You know, she was trained as a political scientist. And if I'm not mistaken, her main research interests fall on issues related to welfare and labor markets institutions in Europe, especially after the financial crisis, and also on the role of trade unions and gender employers organizations in public policy. Arianna has studied before in the University of London in Oxford before joining Warwick, and also has worked as a researcher in the European Foundation for the Improvement of Living and Working Condition in Dublin, Ireland. Well, that was a mouthful.
That is a mouthful indeed.
And also in the Institute for Employment Studies in Brighton. And just one last thing, Arianna also has, besides being academic, has some kind of, I would say, activist interest related to trade union and labor rights. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is definitely correct. I practice as well as study trade unionism, I suppose.
Okay.
So I'll try to bring a bit of that perspective to our discussion today as well.
Great.
That is fantastic, and I look forward very much to our discussion. Now, you may notice that this is a bit out of the envelope what we're doing today, but we found this article in Financial Times by Sarah O'Connor, and special greeting to Sarah if she's listening. And we found it so interesting that it just occurred to us that we should do an episode, especially given that it touches upon Taylorism, which is something we discussed in episode 1 of the show back in October last year. Highly recommend you check out this article. It's very accessible and easy to consume.
The article, as you said, is entitled When Your Boss is an Algorithm. And it was published just some weeks ago, I think on the 8th of September. It was published in the Financial Times. And overall, it tries to understand what does it mean for the perspective of employees, the advent of the gig economy. You know, we usually think about the great things that do to our lives and how, you know, we get our tasks or any kind of jobs that we need to be done and how that is facilitated by the gig economy. But I think this article is shedding light on the other side. If you want to say also the human costs that have. And it starts with covering strike, I would say like any kind of demonstration against Uber Eats in London. And then it proceeds, you know, to discuss different members of the gig economy, especially Deliveroo, Uber, and also some less known ones related to the service sector called Percolata. And then waves that with what we already know, well, in theory, about Taylor and the whole idea of scientific management and control of workers. So in a way, it tries to show how much of these contemporary dynamics we are, you know, observing actually trace back to the advent of when manufacturing plants were subjected to a tighter control.
Right, and as I've mentioned before, we of course discussed scientific management in episode one. So essentially, this discussion today will be a combination of Sarah's article in Financial Times and our previous work on Taylor earlier on in the podcast. So I guess for best effect, do read the article as well as listen to that episode. And actually, I don't know if you know this, but episode one on Taylor as well as episode five on Mary Parker Follett have consistently been some of our most popular episodes week in and week out, even alongside the new releases. So clearly there's a lot of interest out there in Taylor's work as well as the classical works of management.
Is that so? Well, that's very good to hear.
We should read more about Taylor.
Yes, well, we have some big Follett fans out there. That is not surprising. Okay.
I just want to say some quick thing regarding our guest. Because I think one of the things that the articles is somewhat missing, and if you want, all the discussions about Taylorism are missing as well, is these lenses through employment relations, industrial relations in general. So I think having Arianna with us is going to, in a way, help us to tease apart the assumptions that are never really addressed on scientific management and general, you know, discussions about the gig economy. So I'm glad to have her here.
Yeah, well, hopefully I will be able to compensate for my lack of general knowledge on Taylorism with some inputs on the employment relations and generally power relations underpinnings of the whole gig economy issue.
One observation I'd like to make about the article, just to add to what Pedro said, is that for me it was a very eye-opening opportunity to see a human face attached to these companies where you really hear about the business model and all this money that they're making and all the drivers that they have. So that was one thing I really appreciated, was seeing how people's lives are affected mm-hmm. by these algorithms. And it certainly gave me a new perspective on the social relations aspects of the gig economy.
Yeah, the human aspect was very explicitly absent from Taylor's work.
Yeah. And indeed, actually, it's interesting that you mentioned straight up this concept of visibility and, you know, bringing labor to, you know, be seen for the first time in the platform economy, because actually there's a concept that has been advanced by some authors that work on, you know, digital platforms, and they refer to the concept of black box labor, the way in which, you know, this brokering of labor services through this impersonal algorithms basically make labor completely invisible. And so it's actually very interesting to realize that there are still bodies and you know, lives behind the app and how these are affected by these you know, by these digital innovations, in a sense. So yeah, opening up the black box.
Well, I think also speaking of black boxes, we should probably decide how we're going to approach this article. So for instance, when reading this, I made notes on three main themes that popped out for me. One being the gig economy, and to talk about what is it and what are the characteristics of such a thing. Second being the core thing of the article, algorithmic management, and specifically how schedules are made and maintained, what is the role of people, how does participation work, how measurement and control functions, as well as punishment, what does it look like in a case when there isn't a embodied manager and you're dealing with an app. And finally, how does Taylorism come into play? Is it fair to suggest that algorithmic management is Taylorism reincarnated, so to speak? And if not, then what is it? Is it something else? Is it something new that might be worth considering. And of course, what are the implications for that? If it is Taylorism, is there anything we can learn from how scientific management evolved and how it was superseded, if at all? And what are the implications we can draw? What do you think? How does that sound?
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's then get to it. What is this gig economy? Can anyone tell us?
Well, from the dictionary, I usually think about, you know, a set of arrangements in which you have temporary positions, in which organizations contract independent workers for short term.
Yes, it's an episodic one-to-one relationship between the contractor and the contractee. And I think another common way how these are described is zero-hour contracts. And so I'm very curious to hear from Ariana, what is the industrial relations perspective on this?
Yeah, I mean, there are some differences in a sense, because like the gig economy as a concept, I think, specifically refers to those forms of, I suppose, on-call or very flexible forms of labor that are specifically facilitated by, you know, platforms, like technological platforms that act as sort of brokers between the demand and supply of labor, and that favor, you know, sort of hyper-flexibilization of, you know, the labor offer. So the idea being that, you know, you don't need to enter any sort of long-term relationship with, you know, the company or the platform to which you provide a service, and in a sense, with the idea of the labor relationship being really reduced to individual performances, so to speak, or gigs. 0 hours contracts still tend to be predicated on the idea that there is some continuity of service, although, you know, of course, there is still the ambiguity, even in 0 hours contract, about are workers, you know, employees proper, or are they just workers? But it's still a more traditional kind of employment relationship, so to speak, in the sense that there is, you know, a clear contractor of labor, i.e. the employer, and, I mean, it's a, you know, a clear provider of labor demand and the worker. Whereas the concept of the gig economy is that it's predicated upon this, blurring of the employee or worker status, with the idea that in theory the workers are, you know, they don't have a contract at all. They are self-employed contractors that in theory are completely flexible to take up or, you know, not take up the work or to offer their services. And so in a sense, I think the gig economy is almost like one step forward from 0 hours contract, which in a sense are more like traditional employment contracts, just without guaranteed hours.
Well, can I, one observation I'd like to make is that usually when you hear, you know, gig economy, they focus on the very first part of that, this on-call flexible form of brokering. And the analysis doesn't go much farther into how people, you know, respond to the incentives or how it affects people. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to ask a question. I thought it also included things like Airbnb and other ways of brokering some that's not only labor but some kind of service or thing that's being offered to the people who want it, some sort of efficient way of aggregating those services. So labor is just one example, to potential consumers of those services, or am I missing something?
I tend to think of Airbnb as something more related to the sharing economy. No, because it's more about, you know, person-to-person kind of dynamics instead of have someone that is coordinating the tasks. That's just my feeling.
Yeah, that's also, my general understanding of the distinction between the two is that, you know, the sharing economy refers broadly to like all those platforms that sort of facilitate transactions between, you know, buyers and sellers, or like offerers and, you know, demanders of the service, whereas I've always thought of the gig economy more specifically relating to, you know, the carrying out of specific tasks or, you know, labor activities. But, I mean, that may be actually an interesting, you know, reflection to think about, if to what extent is something like Airbnb labor or not, right?
Right. Well, and interesting enough, I don't want to detract from the focus of the article, but like the things that are identified in the Financial Times article that are difficult for us to negotiate through a social process, because it's new ways of working that, even though it is there's a connection to Taylorism, it's not something we're used to doing. It's sort of a new form of Taylorism that hasn't been seen in a while. In that same way, these other forms of the sharing economy create different frictions. And so I just think it's interesting that there are these social negotiations that are necessary but hard to do through the platform itself, or our normal way of addressing those things, or the way, maybe normal isn't the right way to say it, but the customary ways we have are maybe not suited to these tools, which is a very interesting social problem.
Could you expand on what is it that you're referring to exactly?
Sure. So I'll give you an example. So the Airbnb is the one that comes to mind. So essentially, you're renting out a room or a bed or some place to sleep in your apartment, house, condo, some sort of domicile that you're occupying. And some of the criticisms I've seen online are that, there's always a problem of somebody coming and trashing your house, or being a bad house guest or something like that. But it also turns out that many people live in facilities where you're not allowed to do that. In fact, in the flat that I rent, there's a specific covenant in the agreement that I signed that said I will not sublet any of the rooms in the house to somebody else. In other words, have my own renters that I have in the facility. And so there's these many other social implications of having these guest people come in to your facility and not following maybe the protocols of the facility that are not really addressed by these tools. And those are just left up to other people to negotiate. And it does cause some hostility. So that's what I was talking about, where there's no way. So if you're a neighbor and you don't like the fact that somebody else is renting out or subletting their flat to somebody else, it's not easy for you to address that other than just go to management. It's something new that you have to kind of negotiate. And I was just thinking, like the gig economy, I don't want to say we lack tools, but maybe we lack experiences or ways that we're used to doing to negotiate these things.
I mean, I think it's a very interesting analogy, the one that you posed, with Airbnb, because if you think about the challenges that, for example, trade unions face in organizing workers that, work in the gig economy, and how the existing instruments, both of the law in terms of labor law, but also, standard organizing practices of trade unions are, still lagging behind the developments in the technology and in the social relations that emerge around it. And so there is a real, I think, yeah, a real need to sort of evolve both our, I think, our conceptual tools to capture these developments, but also, yeah, how do we practically deal with issues when they emerge, and they will by nature of substance of what we're dealing with, which is work processes in which things are bound to go wrong and someone is bound to be unhappy. And yeah, what instruments do we have to redress that, I suppose?
Yeah, that is very interesting, Arianna. And I think that's one of the powers of this article and one of the reasons I like it. It's usually when I hear people writing about the gig economy, especially, earlier days, there was this kind of rosy positive bias in which, the technology is going to solve all the social problems, is going to connect everyone, is going to change the way we live. But I think that we are starting to see, as it becomes more linked to our daily life, we start to see what the problems that actually emerge and how we lack, as I said, the tools or the regulation, to make this work in the best way possible.
I guess this is one of the initial places where we can relate this concept of gig economy and algorithmic management to the work of Taylor, because as we discussed in episode one, and I think you mentioned that, Pedro, back then, that one of the consequences of Taylor's work was to break up the relationship from social to a one-to-one between the employee and the employer. So instead of working on a horizontal level, where employees would interact with each other, what he did was introduce a vertical communication, which of course is very much like what the article describes as what the app does. The employees interact with the app and the customers interact with the app, but there isn't any kind of lateral communication or any kind of lateral building of relations. And that can, I suppose, be very much isolating, same as in Taylor's system.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that is one of the most pressing challenges for, you know, those that are working into, you know, looking at how workers in the working through such arrangements can be organized, because there is a complete fragmentation of an individualization of the work process. Like, I mean, there isn't even a physical workspace in which workers see each other, and this poses incredible issues in terms of trying to potentially leverage forms of collective action from an industrial relations perspective, so to speak.
Yes, and that's particularly interesting because on the face of it, it is the gig economy employees that would probably benefit most from some sort of collective arrangement, because not only do they miss out on the single workplace, they also miss out on all the goods that would normally be provided by the employer, such as health insurance and pension coverage. And
and I would say not only, so there's this collective action aspect, which I think is very important. There's also a learning aspect where if you just have this individualized relationship with management or the algorithm or the organization, it removes you from the social and learning processes that you would normally go on in the workplace. And so there's this whole other consideration of is that really the best way to develop employees and help them learn and grow? Because the thing I kept thinking over and over as I read the article was, it almost treats the employees like they're disposable. There's just this, they're this individual person, and if you don't like it, then we've got plenty of other deliver people or drivers, you know, behind you. So I thought that sort of skewed or asymmetrical power relationship, I thought was disturbing.
Well, I think that's both a limitation and a certain attraction that gig economy brings to bear, because as with Taylorism, the interchangeability of employees not only requires low skilled employment pool, but it also, for the employees, basically exempts them from shouldering any considerable degree of responsibility for the performance of the organization. And then there's another thing, that using such contract labor or independent consultants, for instance, so more highly skilled individuals for these gigs, may facilitate the dissemination actually of new technologies, because it will reduce the lag between the first movers and
yes.
the followers. And
yes.
Thus, by shedding the long-term employment relationship, it may also make it easier for companies to raise productivity, because they would be able to shift production to most efficient sites quicker. But kind of thinking about things to do with algorithmic management, such as the Deliveroo and Uber and Airbnb, what this flexibility, I think, facilitates is that it actually makes organizations better at the mass production of stuff, that especially products with clear, easily taught technology, but definitely less competitive, as you said, Ralph, at things that require adaptation and innovation and such.
Yeah, and I think there are, you know, there's an interesting point that you just made, Dimitris, about the issue of, the reduction of responsibility that comes from the fact of, in a sense, from the setup of the gig economy, i.e. no worker is indispensable, therefore you are supposedly more free to potentially switch off or like not engage with the platform if you don't need to. The problem, I guess, with that, with that interpretation is that it assumes this sort of equality of power relationship in the wage relation, right? Or like the idea that we engage in labor out of complete freedom. And actually, like, I think there's few sociological studies that have been done about the gig economy so far, Especially in the context of like, you know, online platforms such as TaskRabbit or, you know, Amazon Mechanical Turk and so on, which are even more geographically fragmented than something like Deliveroo or Uber, is that really, you know, they are the most vulnerable workers, those really at the bottom rungs of the labor market in hyper precarious situations that tend to rely on these forms of very precarious income streams as a way to get by. So this idea that, you know, we're all free and we can just like take on some work when we can and then switch off is possibly based on a bit of a kind of like idealized notion, a bit like, you know, global north centric notion of what the gig economy is, in which we're all like managers of ourselves, whilst actually I think it probably, you know, mystifies a little bit the nature of a lot of these platforms in a sense. I mean, I don't want to sound over polemic, but
No. Yeah.
I think that was a good point, because I think one of the things I keep thinking about when I was reading the article and thinking about gig economy is, does this, that sort of switch on and switch off of my labor, and I've had this infinite level of flexibility. I mean, Pedro was talking about earlier, this technology, this idea that, okay, you have this technology that will fix everything, but in fact, that has costs, right? There's a impact on your labor and what you're able to go do that isn't really discussed about that way or in that same light. And I kept wondering, I wonder if there's, you know, forms of labor or consultancy or something where you could have this kind of arrangement. TaskRabbit might be an example, where you have the ability to kind of withhold your services and you have some power because your services are really valuable or you're really value added. And maybe that the situation would be, the leverage between the worker and the algorithm would be different in those cases. But I just was thinking about, you know, what happens when you treat people as if they're all just complete interchangeable parts. I mean, that whole feeling doesn't feel good to me.
I mean, and I guess a lot of these platforms are predicated upon the principle that, you know, I'm not an expert in Taylorism, but I think this sounds to me quite Taylorist in terms of like breaking down tasks to such an extent that at the end of the day, the level of skill or specialism that is required to carry them out is very low. And therefore, everyone kind of becomes substitutable from the eyes of the platform of, you know, the labor broker, because the task has been, you know, simplified and standardized to such an extent that literally almost anyone could carry it out. Hence the leverage that individual workers can, you know, exercise in that context is really diminished, isn't it?
I was going to say something. Ariana said most of the things I was planning to say, but I really much agree with this idea that, you know, it's not just because that you have, that you can choose, quote unquote, that you are protected. You know, freedom actually doesn't come with, I would say, the freedom to choose is the freedom to choose to be exploited in this situation. You know, so all this defense that, you know, as we read in the article that the spokespersons of Uber and Deliveroo always have, you know, is predicated in a myth or an ideology, I might even say, you know, because as Ariana was saying, both parts bring different things to this bargain. And the workers, many times, they cannot fully choose because it's the only job options that they have, you know. So that's something more deep than this idea that, you know, everyone is an individual and does it for their own will and therefore they're responsible for that. But the other thing I wanted to say, I don't know if I should wait a bit instead of going all on Taylor, is that I have a feeling from the little I know from Taylor that he actually will be very surprised to the way these things are set up. I mean, technically, yes, it's follow Taylorism, but I think one of the core assumptions of Taylor, you know, was in a way he was, at least what he wrote, he was really concerned about employee welfare as well. You know, so one of the things when he was trying to change the way tasks were done, he had some concerns about ergonomics of a task, how we would design it in a way that would compromise less or more the people's body. And also he had this idea about, you know, as you make a factory more productive, you're able to share the profit with the employees as well, which is something completely out of the window in this situation here.
Well, there's another important step in between there, which is not only that Taylor was concerned about not burning his employees out, his ideal was to pursue the best deal possible for them on their behalf by virtue of essentially knowing better how to do that.
In a way, we have to recognize Taylor was an engineer. He was not an economist designing, you know, ways to... well, I think in a way he had a very goodwill idea to work because he was not trying to, although he did, he was trying really to redesign the job, but not necessarily redesign the employment. And here we have the redesign of employment, which is a different thing.
That is an excellent sociological point there. And another way in which this diverges from Taylor is that Taylor had, of course, the famous One Best Way, which he derived from doing empirical research on how people perform work by studying the best people he could find. Whereas this isn't the case with the algorithm, because the algorithm doesn't take advice from the employees. It tells what to do, in such a way as take this, bring it there, and in a set amount of time.
Well, it also has metrics, though. That's the part that was one of the other chilling aspects of the article. It has these metrics that they use, that it's just a machine counting how fast you deliver, how many orders you refuse, the sales per employee per square foot, you know, that sort of thing. And so there's that other aspect of measuring performance that's going on as well.
Yes, exactly. And that seems similar, but it really isn't once you think about it further, because while it does measure, it doesn't prescribe ways in which to improve performance. So, for instance, Taylor trained his employees in the One Best Way, whereas the algorithm hides that. So employees are still left to their own devices as to the performance of work, such as choosing the most optimal delivery route, in the case of delivery, for example, but it doesn't tell them how to best perform work.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And that's because they were talking about Deliveroo's algorithm monitors the couriers closely, and they get these personalized emails. And so I agree that that's a departure from Taylor.
Yeah, and I actually thought that in the article there were maybe some conflation between different aspects of algorithmic management and its relationship to the gig economy. Like, because on some respects there was this, you know, I think the Perculata example was particularly interesting because it talked about.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it seemed to me quite different from the gig economy because it talked about the application of algorithmic management, i.e., you know, sort of like hyper scientific methods of managing the workflow and the organization of the work process on the shop floor, but still within the context of a fairly standard, you know, employment relationship, so to speak. Which I think is quite different from the kind of like platform economies such as Uber and Deliveroo and so on. And so I think there is something different different aspects, I suppose, of algorithmic management. On one hand is the issue of the measurement, right, and the quantification of the targets ultimately used as a tool of control on the workers, right? And then there is the aspect of how it blurs the employer-employee relationship, which is the other aspect, which maybe is not so necessarily related to Taylorism as such, but it's more in the sense of like a blurring of the traditional employment relationship, which in Taylor's time was not even on the cards at all, I suppose, right? Does this make sense of the distinction between the issues?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, Taylorism was management by best practice, whereas this is management by averages.
Yeah, that's a very interesting way to put it, I guess.
Well, since we're transitioning to the case of algorithmic management, I think maybe it's worth defining, or at least briefly discussing, what is it that this is? What is algorithmic management, and what are the characteristics, and what does it entail?
Would you like to share your definition?
Well, I can give it a go. I guess it's an offspring of the big data movement, which advocates this hyper-rational approach to dynamic interdependence between individuals, and I guess with the intent to maybe predict patterns of communication and collaboration on the basis of contextual interactions. So I guess it's a way to leverage data to process a large amount of different combinations of how people may act and interact with each other, and kind of derive the averages from that. What do you think?
Well, when I think about it, I think that it's in a way a digitalization of a process that actually already existed, you know, and the article even talks about that. When you had Taylor, you had everyone that was sent out to look at how long people would do the task and how specific steps they would follow. And then they would have the planning department that would exactly analyze that and suggest and make recommendations last, you know, slash requirements. And people would get punished or not, you know, for following that protocol. And so I think there's two parts. There is the idea of objectification, which is already there in Taylor, but instead of having real people doing these calculations, this analysis, this is done automatically by some kind of algorithm, exactly. So this kind of artificial intelligence, you know, a program does that. But I think in essence it's the same. That's at least how I see it.
So I can give you the definition of the Carnegie Mellon paper that was read at a conference, because it actually is available on the web. They didn't actually, no problem, and we can put a link to it in the show notes or the podcast notes. So they give in the introduction, they say that they call software programs that assume managerial functions and surrounding institutional devices that support algorithmic management. And then they go on to say, algorithmic management allows companies to oversee myriads of workers in an optimized manner at a large scale.
So I suppose the idea is
that's
that...
that's as close as...
Go ahead. So the idea is that it's, you know, being data-driven and, you know, based on, you know, the capacity to, like, elaborate data on, you know, work processes, it's... substitutes what a human manager would have done in terms of the allocation and organization of the work process by, you know, putting a software in charge instead.
Another thing that jumps out straight away is that this definition betrays a certain attitude towards management, namely the one of the command control variety, which, of course, as we discussed throughout the previous 18 episodes, is by far not the only way how people can manage. And here the whole talk of setting aims, taking measurements, and then executing punishment where goals are not met or where conditions have been violated is, it's a very actually Fayolian way of approaching administration. And do refer to episode 2 for more on that.
Yes. That is true. It's more about task design than exactly authority and power, which was more of Fayol's gig.
It was interesting, though, how in the article on the, you know, the Percolator example, when the founder was quoted as saying that, you know, the putting algorithms in charge can actually, you know, overcome some of the biases to which human managers are, you know, naturally prone in terms of whatever, giving more hours to people that they like or people that like them. And so this idea that by depersonalizing the whole process, you can somewhat make it fairer because you know, human interaction is prone to biases. I mean, I thought this was particularly dystopian.
I mean,
from my...
Yes, and ironic, right? It's ironic, as if the algorithm couldn't have biases, right? That goes back to Pedro's comment earlier, that there's this bias that technology will fix everything. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that in his comments. Oh, we'll take the humans out of the loop. We won't have bias work assignment. They won't be just giving more hours to their friend. Well, yeah, but that also means you can't tell your boss that you're having difficulties with your childcare arrangements and you need a little bit of extra consideration, or in the case of the Deliveroo driver who got fired when he said he couldn't come to work and sent the emails, and they only reinstated him when he could prove through screenshots that he sent the email. And what I was thinking when I was reading that was, So there's no responsibility on management to go fix whatever it is they didn't, you know, they didn't see in the emails. No, it's the driver's job to prove that he did the right thing. Oh, what a sorry state.
Well, I just want to say one thing. When I read that example for Colazza, you know, it seems such what a computer scientist trying to deal with social aspects would say, because, you know, algorithms have politics. He's talking as if the system he designed, because in his, I would say, set of assumptions is the optimal one. It's not necessarily the optimal one, because there is still a choice and it still puts in place a specific arrangement of relations. And if anything, when I read it, I instantly thought about human relations and everything we have learned after Taylor and how much sociodynamics matter to the very productivity that happens in the workplace. So it's not just because you said you have found the optimum according to your assumptions, which we would say Tayloristic scientific management, in which work should be individualized. Well, I would be curious to see that actually that could be less productive, because you are undoing all the social ties and all the, I would say, arrangement in place that makes organization happen in a way or another. So my point is actually there is strength in the way humans manage things sometimes.
And that's all for part 1 of episode 18. Thank you so much for listening. Again, we apologize for a slight delay in releasing this episode, but we hope you're enjoying it, and certainly as much as we have enjoyed discussing it with Arianna. And you'll be back for more next week when we finish our discussion on gig economy, algorithmic management, and on whether this is a reincarnation of Taylorism. So if you're enjoying this podcast, please either get in touch with us and tell us that you are, give us suggestions, maybe some comments. Also, do tell your friends, colleagues, and students about us. The podcast has been growing at an unbelievable pace, and we are so grateful to all you lovely listeners for supporting us by listening to us. It's a privilege. If you'd like to learn more about us, if you're just tuning in now, do go to our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com, where you can find lots of different information, all of our previous episodes, including episode 1 on scientific management and episode 2 on Fayol's general and industrial management that we've alluded to throughout part 1 here, as well as our blog and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. So thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next week as we finish our conversation on the issues of technology, management, and algorithms here on Talking About Organizations.